This is UN and Africa from the United Nations in New York. I'm Matthew Wells. In this week's programme, the spotlight falls on Zimbabwe's human rights record and the whereabouts of a journalist who vanished 18 months ago. And in Bangui, the Deputy Secretary General tells the people of the Central African Republic the UN stands by their side on the path to reconciliation. But first, during July's outbreak of violence in South Sudan, there was a lack of leadership and clarity over the UN's mandate. The head of an independent special investigation team has concluded. Acts of violence were committed against civilians and peacekeepers in the capital Juba between the 8th and 11th of July by the South Sudanese Army, SPLA, and opposition forces. The Secretary General quickly appointed a special investigation team to determine the circumstances surrounding the incidents. Ban Ki-moon was also concerned about allegations that the UN mission there, UNMISS, did not respond appropriately to prevent this and other serious crimes of sexual violence, such as the attack at the hotel complex known as Terrain Camp. The head of the investigation, retired Major General Patrick Kamet, spoke to Jocelyn Sambira about the findings.
We found there was a certain amount of lack of leadership on various levels, with the military, with the police, and with the civilians, on leading from the front when the fighting started. And when thousands and thousands of IDPs moved from the POC sites into UN House, breaking the gates, breaking and looting accommodation and containers. Then, you know, at that moment, you need the leadership on the various levels, leading from the front, leading by example, to take care and take charge of the situation. That is on the issue of the protection of civilian sites, the POC sites. Then on the findings of Terrain Camp, so to speak. During the day, there was a lot of heavy fighting around UN House. And this Terrain Camp is on, let's say, 1.5 kilometers away from UN House, secluded area. On that road was heavy fighting, tanks, artillery was used, mortars, heavy machine guns, even attack helicopters. So it was not easy, or I would say almost impossible, to get out of the camp.
Is it true that some of the UN peacekeepers left their posts?
There were a number of peacekeepers who abandoned their post and moved back to their main location. They were sent back at a certain moment, and then when heavy fighting the next day started, they abandoned their post again. Some of them did very well, others did not very well.
And going back to Terrain?
Going back to Terrain Camp. So at a certain moment, you know, the fighting died down on that road. The National Security Service and other elements from the government extracted the majority of the people from Terrain Camp. But when the evening fell, it became clear that three people were left behind. Well, you can imagine that if you have been tortured, raped, gang raped and beaten up, and you have to stay for the night on your own in that Terrain Camp, that is unimaginable. And the criticizing of the special investigation is that at least one should have tried.
What finding were you most shocked by?
The finding that at the end of the day, at the beginning of that evening, that with the knowledge that three victims were still left behind in Terrain Camp, and that the decision was made to lift it, the extraction, to the next morning, was for the whole team the biggest shock.
Zimbabwe's human rights record has been in the spotlight at the UN in Geneva. In a scheduled review, the government has responded to concerns about serious restrictions on freedom of expression and the excessive use of force by security services. Harare was also pushed for news of journalist Itai Dzamara, who went missing 18 months ago. Daniel Johnson has the story.
At the UN's Human Rights Council in Geneva, all member states are expected to defend their human rights record. This process is called the Universal Periodic Review. It provides an opportunity to cover many rights issues, which in Zimbabwe's case included efforts to curb corruption, alleged serious violations of people's right to freedom of expression ahead of elections in 2018, and the reintroduction of the death penalty. The government was also challenged over forced disappearances, and in particular on the case of journalist and political activist Itai Dzamara. He hasn't been seen since March last year. The issue was raised by New Zealand's Carl Reach, Deputy Permanent Representative to the UN in Geneva.
We call on Zimbabwe to meet its international obligations and respect the constitution, particularly in regard to the protection of political activists and journalists from harassment, arbitrary arrest and detention. New Zealand recommends that Zimbabwe ensure all individuals who have been detained and charged with an offence are given a fair and impartial trial while ensuring the independence of the judiciary.
Heading the Zimbabwe delegation, the country's Vice President, Emmerson Mnangagwa, spoke of isolated cases of forced disappearance, and he said that investigations were ongoing to find missing journalist Itai Dzamara.
In this particular case, government is investigating all the leads to establish the whereabouts of our citizen, and government is working with the family of the missing person and the Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights.
On the question of changes to the death penalty legislation in Zimbabwe, Mr. Mnangagwa said that constitutional amendments now meant it only applied to men aged between 21 and 70 years old who'd been convicted of aggravated murder. Switzerland asked whether Zimbabwe's government would guarantee the independence of and give enough power and resources to the country's National Peace and Reconciliation Commission. The body was set up in 2013 to deal with past rights violations, though it has yet to start work. Emmerson Mnangagwa explained that Parliament had the opportunity to do something about that.
The National Peace and Reconciliation Bill, which will operationalise the National Peace and Reconciliation Commission, is said to be tabled before Parliament during the current session of Parliament.
Mr. Mnangagwa also reaffirmed the country's commitment to promoting human, social and economic rights, but he said that the country's drought, made worse by the El Niño weather phenomenon and economic sanctions by Western powers, had put pressure on the government to implement reform. Daniel Johnson, United Nations, Geneva.
A moment now of hope has arrived in the Central African Republic, or CAR, which could represent a new era of reconciliation and development. That's the view of UN Deputy Secretary-General Jan Eliasson, speaking in the capital of CAR, Bangui, shortly after meeting the country's new president, Faustin Archange Touadéra. 3 years of fighting between Christian and Muslim armed factions fueled instability across the country. Tensions are still high in Bangui, and violent demonstrations took place outside the headquarters of the UN mission last month, leaving 4 dead. Jean-Pierre Ramazani asked Mr. Eliasson what action the UN should be taking against armed groups in CAR.
Well, the United Nations peacekeeping always have as a mandate to protect civilians, to protect the population. In the past, our task was, in fact, less complicated than it is in today's world. In the past, UN was always accepted as a peacemaker, as an impartial actor. But unfortunately, in today's very complex situations, United Nations can easily become a target. We see it in South Sudan, we see it in Mali, and partly we see it here, where certain groups are identifying the outside forces, the United Nations, even as a problem. When that occurs and the level of violence goes beyond a certain point, our problems are growing because we are not actually trained for fighting wars or fighting in real conflicts. But of course I recognize that there is an expectation from people that United Nations forces shall protect them. And the Secretary General and I expect our forces to be there and to protect the population in risky situations. It is sometimes a very difficult situation, as we have seen in South Sudan recently, and also here. And we will try to do our very best to play that role, that stabilizing role.
Central Africa is troubled nowadays by attacks against civilians in different locations, in certain places in the country. Could this country, I mean Central African Republic, have any chance to be heard positively in November 17th in Brussels?
I will try to bring your voices, the voices of Central Africa, to that meeting. I had several alternatives, options for my Africa trip, which is the last one I do for the United Nations. And I chose to go to Central African Republic because I felt that if I go to lead the UN delegation in Brussels, it would be much better if I speak from personal experience, having been here, even if it's a short visit, but still it's very intensive, and bring the voices from Central African Republic to the meeting. I was earlier the emergency relief coordinator in the United Nations and dealt with the humanitarian crisis, and I felt all the time that if I didn't have my personal engagement, my own passionate engagement in the issues, I didn't reach the results I wanted.
And that brings us to the end of this edition of UN and Africa. You can follow more of our programmes at radio.un.org. We're also on Facebook and on Twitter. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Matthew Wells.